Welcome to Pickle Me This, the officially unofficial podcast for Rick and Morty on Cartoon Network's Adult Swim. I'm your host, Jim.
And I'm Aaron.
You can subscribe to the show on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you listen to podcasts. Today we're covering Season 3, Episode 3, Pickle Rick! Here's Aaron with the recap.
Morty and Summer School has advised Beth that her kids need therapy after some glaze huffing and pants pissing issues has caused concern. Everyone is on board except for Rick, who has transformed himself into a pickle as an excuse not to attend. Pickle Rick finds himself flushed down a sewer where he has to fight both rats and roaches for supremacy, constructing an elaborate exoframe for his pickle from their corpses and bits of trash in the process. Emerging from the nearest toilet, he finds himself embroiled in international intrigue as the crapper happened to be housed in some sort of Russian embassy or spy agency. Rick has to fight waves of henchmen and an enigmatic killer named Jaguar before finally escaping in a helicopter as the compound explodes. Back at the therapist's office, the Smith family learns how to communicate non-violently and begin to work through their many issues when Pickle Rick, exhausted from his day, crashes the session, engages in brutal verbal combat with the therapist, and seemingly reverses all therapeutic progress the family has made. Before we get into the episode, there's actually some Rick and Morty news. A couple days ago, which will be almost a week by the time this thing airs, Justin Roiland and Dan Harmon announced on the official Rick and Morty Twitter that they're having a contest. It's all set up to benefit a charity. They say that your donation supports Next for Autism and Bergen County's United Way, helping to transform the national landscape of services for people with autism. I know that's something of a bugaboo with, not a bugaboo, it's something that Dan cares a lot about, a neurotypical people. I think Justin feels the same way. So that's why they're picking that charity. And, you know, like a dollar is essentially one entry. And if you give more, you get extra entries and you can also get some cool Rick and Morty rewards. I actually snagged one of the last of the Pickle Rick with Power Omega Laser Pop Funko figures.
I'm not holding that hope. So I think it's probably a slim chance that we get it.
It's a slim chance, but you know, on the finite curve of Bald Move Reality.
Oh yeah, actually, we just guaranteed we got it in one universe.
That's right. We just have to. I just have to steer my consciousness towards that light.
You hadn't have done it, we still would have gotten it in one of the dimensions.
So the prize is you get drawn into an episode of Rick and Morty. So I don't know if that means they'll use your likeness. I don't know if they'll use your voice, but you'll be drawn into a future episode, which is cool enough. But you also win, as part of that, a trip to LA so you can meet Justin and Dan, a tour of the Rick and Morty production studio. In the video accompanying this, Justin says, "We're a real hoot to be around." So probably will be fun. If you're a Rick and Morty fan, I can't imagine this wouldn't be a dream come true. All right, Jim, episode 303, Pickle Rick, instant internet classic. What'd you think?
Yeah, you summed it up. Instant internet classic. I mean, nobody forgets Pickle Rick once they've seen it. But I feel like they forget half of this episode, the therapy session, and it's all just about Pickle Rick.
Yeah.
I don't know. I was reading around a lot of reviews, and I find it funny when people focus on the Pickle Rick part, because clearly the meat of this episode, in my mind, is the therapy session. But, I mean, it's just so much fun. Pickle Rick is great.
You know what's fun? It would be interesting, and you never know how this stuff is going, because I was just looking online, and there's so much Pickle Rick merchandise. There's plushies, there's Funko Pop figures, there's just an amazing array of Pickle Rick products. You know, like SpongeBob in the 2000s kind of became a gay icon. I wonder, like, if like Pickle Rick could be like a secret like pro therapy thing.
Okay,
because just to bank on that, like it's subtle. Yeah. Like you see a Pickle Rick on your car, it's like, oh yeah, that person sees the value of therapy.
50 years from now, therapists, like, when they hang their shingle out, there's just gonna be a picture of a pickle on
it. Yeah, like doctors.
Oh, that's
a
therapist. Okay.
Yeah, it's like, why not? Because doctors have this weird association with some kind of Egyptian staff that's got wings and it's got serpents, and who the fuck knows how that happened? Yeah, I could see like 200 years from now, you just have an anthropomorphic pickle, and oh yeah, that's psychotherapy.
Yeah.
I mean, there's so much to love about this episode. You've got the pickle part, like, that contains at least three completely jaw-dropping and hilarious action sequences.
Yeah.
Rick versus the Rat Gang, Rick versus the thugs, where he's just sawing him in half with that laser, Rick versus Jaguar, and then Rick and the therapist dueling monologues at the end are some of the series' finest writing. Like, it's just because you just, you know, Rick just devastates this therapist and you think, well, that's it, smoke and crater. And then she comes back and nonviolently hands him his ass.
It's
a great, you know, easy top five episode of Rick and Morty.
And then it's got tie-ins to other episodes. I think what I think we're supposed to realize here is that Mr. Goldenfold is in the therapist's office for eating shit.
Yeah.
Because in a previous episode, when the world went to shit because of the Federation took over, he was in the underground resistance living in the sewers.
I had that as
he must have been eating shit that time, right?
I forgot about the fact that he lived down in the sewers. I thought maybe this is some kind of weird post-traumatic stress of like fighting off this alien invasion and all the stress and all that kind of stuff. But maybe he just had to eat shit to survive, and now he's like acquired a taste for it.
And it's there's another, you know, small mention when Rick's talking to the rat, and he's like, "Oh, I'm gonna go back up, and I'm gonna shit so you can eat it." It's kind of like a tie in there too. Like, yeah, I think they're going for something there.
And that's exactly why I put it in notes, because I feel like there's enough there that it would be kind of amusing and also kind of tragic and maybe even poignant to have Goldenfold kind of deal with this just like, you know, in a background kind of way, because he was leader of the human resistance. How do you go back to being a high school math teacher? The reason a lot of people look up and idolize Rick is that he consistently out Tony Stark.
Mm-hmm.
Like, Tony Stark builds a clanking suit that's good for 30 seconds in a cave with 6 months and high-tech weapons grade stuff to start with. You know, Rick constructs a combat exosuit out of rat and roach parts in like maybe 15 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
And just, I mean, just to him going from like, you know, seeing the roaches and like biting his own lip to get him attracted to Brian, and that him doing that, like the Conan the Barbarian thing where the buzzard lands on him and he tears its neck out, like that, just the brutal him biting its head and ripping its brain case open, and the demented, just old boy Raid Redemption Ricky O shit.
That rat fight sequence is amazing.
Where he's just,
it's some seriously impressive animation.
Yeah, and very inventive. Like, he's got these power screws, he's got the X-Acto blades that pop out, and the way he just revels in it. That he's invented all this like diabolical dialogue. That's the funny thing, is his whole cold-blooded shtick is, you're not special to me, and you know, even though you're larger and have very many distinct, the whole idea that he's giving this speech to this rat belies the entire speech.
Right, it can't understand it.
Right,
it's just, like, and concepts like a god to a rat mean nothing. Like, you prayed to the wrong god. You should have prayed to me.
Right.
Yeah, it's great.
I love the Demolition Man shit with Danny Trejo. Like, you know, they've got this tortured, I don't know, separatist freedom fighter that they've have chained in this basement. It's Sean Connery from The Rock.
It's The Rock. It's
you got to have like antimatter to stop matter. And then them negotiating over the combat. It's such a tropey scene, but they spice it up by having Rick being a pickle. And the simultaneous, like, you know, because, you know, we've seen the, you know, sealing your wound with gunpowder, or like in the Fargo season when the Hanzi sealed it with that's just like badass, like, oh, he's just going to take super glue and seal his wound shut. Juxtaposed with Rick stapling a piece of pickle from a sandwich and screaming, it's so good.
And this concept of Selenia that in this, like, he has stumbled into what is perhaps the perfect intimidation scenario, unknowingly.
Right.
Because they have apparently this folklore about a pickle man who crawls out of cold bowls of soup to steal the dreams of wasteful children. Yeah. It's truly amazing, like the mythology they've constructed.
But it sounds like something that might come out of some crazy Eastern Bloc country that's dealt with famine. You know, something that the parents tell their children to keep them from waste. Like, we in the West, it's like, hey, don't, there's children starving in Africa, you know, clean your plate. In Russia, it's if you don't finish your goulash, solenya will get you. I looked it up. Solenya apparently means salted snack.
Okay, that's apt.
Yeah, I mean, pickle would fit, that would fit within that category. Yep. And just, yeah, him incorporating this, like, I'm not going to steal the children's dreams. I'm going to take their parents.
And he lasers through three guys.
And my favorite, that the Omega beam powered by the AA batteries. I feel like I've said this like 17 different times across like all the different times we talked about Rick and Morty. But like, there's something about this insanely powerful weapon being powered by a AA battery, but it just charges this smoking spent, like it's like a fusion rifle clip or something. It's just really cool and satisfying in a very almost kind of, it scratches the Goonies kind of itch, like, you know, mm-hmm. Data and Goonies.
Yeah.
Like something he'd come up with. Yeah. Any other? Oh, there's also the other one that I liked with the fight with Jaguar is the time cop jump split that he does between the cubicles.
Yeah, I mean, this is a Cliff Van Notes Damme. Of action movies from the era, from like the 80s, 90s.
I mean, it's a very simple idea. Like, mm-hmm. take 30 action movies from the 80s and 90s and take the best 5 seconds from them and shove them in this minute-long clip and then make one of the characters be some kind of demented Iron Man pickle and or Rat Man, Bone Man, Blood Man pickle.
Yeah, both.
Yeah, all the above. Anything else before we transition into the section that I call Rick being pathetic?
No. 84% of our audience is free to tune out now.
Yeah.
We've talked about the Pickle Rick stuff.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
The other 16, stick with us.
No, you might want to fast forward to Alan Sepinwall because he's a smart dude.
Okay,
and,
yeah.
And he's got some good takes, too.
And he talks about Pickle Rick.
And he talks about Pickle Rick being awesome, even.
Mm-hmm.
Rick being pathetic. One of the things I think I've observed with people I consider smart but have maybe lower social IQ is that they think that everyone that's less intelligent than them are just like stupid, like bone crushingly stupid. And some of the subterfuges they pull on like their friends and family, like complete. And maybe they don't think they're stupid. Maybe they just don't have any respect, so don't bother to come up with anything better. But I think this is like the Rick's pickle scheme is that to the nth degree, mm-hmm. where it's like, not only does literally everyone know, and a lot of the therapy seems to revolve around the therapist getting everyone to admit the things that they already know, but not only does this look like a transparent attempt to dodge therapy, but the whole like suspended syringe with the Rube Goldberg contraption to cut the string in 10 minutes, like who's he fooling?
I mean, he's only fooling those who are willing themselves to be fooled, like Beth.
And it works.
I think she's the only one.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, it's like one of those things where, like, if it constantly slips your mind, you like if Rick was being legit and, like, he just is constantly slipping his mind important engagements and promises he keeps to his loved ones and friends, like, that even then, it's like that stops becoming an excuse because a person that cared about not hurting people would like come up with a system like writing things down, mm-hmm. getting a fucking smartphone with reminders, like something that if you don't go through those things, then the bottom line is you just don't care. You
well,
don't care enough to care.
I mean, at the end of this episode, you know, the therapist, Dr. Wong, correctly in my mind identifies, you know, Rick's thing here, which is he doesn't care enough to put in the work.
Right.
I mean, he, like she says, you know, therapy, I have no doubt therapy would bore you to death. And because it's work and you have no tolerance for work, which is ironic in an episode where Rick goes through, you know, goes to great lengths. I mean, he's willing to turn himself into a pickle with the possibility of not even being able to get out of that situation, having to kill, you know, hundreds of innocent animals and goons in order to make it right. And that's so much work. That is so much work he's doing. And yet it's the kind of work that keeps him from having to do the work he doesn't want to do. Right.
Yeah,
which is the harder work to him.
Like as a dedicated procrastinator myself.
Yeah. Same here.
There's a lot of times where, you know, like something really needs to be cleaned today.
Mm.
Because that's what I'm doing instead of the thing I should be doing. Like, oh, I got a gleaming bathroom, but that wasn't the problem. The problem was, you know, I need to write this outline for Pickle Rick.
Yeah.
It's because to your point, there's this thing where he rolls out into the driveway, and if it doesn't rain, Rick dies, and he even realizes it. Like, how fucking stupid this is that I've done this. But nothing, it reminded me a lot of, during the thing where he fragmented time, and Morty's collar got broke, so he slaps his on there, and he's going through, and he's, like, desperately begging God for help. And as soon as he solves the problem, he's like, fuck you, God. This is Rick in a nutshell. Like, he has these rock bottom... oh my God, I can't believe how far I've fallen and what's happened to me. But the second that, like, some dumb thing out of his control allows him to, you know, if the collar didn't glint at just the right time and he sees it, if the rain didn't come right there, he's a goner.
Yeah.
All that stuff's like, nope, I did it again. I'm awesome. I don't have to worry about this.
Right.
And the impact on his family, like, I thought it was interesting in the performance and animation, just how, like, sad Morty was when he's going through the charade of, like, yo, flip the pickle over. And, you know, just the look on his face when he realizes this is what Rick's done. Mm-hmm. And also, you know, on the ride over there, Morty asking, like, you know, how is this family therapy if Dad's not invited and Grandpa won't come? Like, just this is a real low point for Morty.
Yeah. Yeah, it's sad.
Especially coming after, you know, when you think about this building off the previous episode of, like, that emotional goodbye he had with Armathy, right? Mm-hmm. You know, that was the one, and now he's doing this therapy, and it's super cruel at the end where clearly the kids see value in this process.
Oh, man. Yeah.
And yet, because their mother is an enabler of this crazy person, no progress is going to be made. Oh, God, it's pathos. You also have... like that crazy psychotic speech he gives to Jaguar at the end.
Okay.
You know,
about
it's like
dimensions and infinite daughters. And
what it was, his quote is like, to the extent that love is familiarity over time, my infinite amount of daughters and grandchildren precludes that attachment, you know, or that specialness of that attachment. And Jaguar is kind of like, who is a deeply disturbed and troubled individual himself, no doubt. He's like, okay, good luck with that.
Uh-huh.
It's
showing just how much more fucked up Rick is in that regard.
Yeah.
That's super interesting to me because, you know, we talk about the consequences of this infinite reality, but we don't really talk about them in terms of the family so much. But it's interesting because I think Rick can look at this two ways, right? He clearly doesn't value the version of his family that he currently has because he has infinite versions of the family, which sort of enables him to not care about them, but also not to ever have to, like, really deal with their history together. Mm-hmm. So, like, when he disappoints them, when he... you know, does things that hurt them, he doesn't have to consider that as something he's done wrong because he can always just go get a new family who doesn't know about that stuff and has no history with it and replace them. Right. And set the, he can hit the reset button on that relationship anytime he wants.
Right.
And I feel like that enables him to not think about those consequences.
Do you want to talk about therapy kind of like, because that's my next bullet point, the therapy stuff.
Yeah.
Because I thought the depiction of therapy and the therapist was really good. And it's so rare to find, you know, usually even in this day when you see therapy depicted on screen, it's always kind of like in a disparaging or, you know, kind of a cringy way. It's depicted as something that's either ineffective or it's something that if it's effective, it's only weak people that need it. Mm-hmm. And this person, this Dr. Wong, asking smart questions, able to quickly zero in on the heart of the matter. I thought it's great because, like, you know, I mean, I'm of the personal belief that if you're seeing a therapist and you're like 3 to 6 sessions in, I'm not saying you need to have a breakdown or a breakthrough rather where, like, everything, like, the clouds open, but, like, you should feel like you're on to something because mm-hmm. if you're not, then, you know, maybe your therapist sucks. Maybe you don't have a good rapport. Maybe you're closed off and this therapist is too timid about, you know, bringing you out of that shell. But, like, it's you should see, like, this is kind of like a good first visit. Like, they're that she's really zeroing in. She's teaching this family's walking out of the room, if nothing else, with a skill they didn't have before, mm-hmm. which is able to talk about difficult emotional issues without having that emotions kind of overwhelm the conversation and getting sidetracked, and how also this is perceived as an attack by Beth.
Yeah. Yeah. To the point where she tells the therapist, fuck you. Also Summer and Morty, fuck you
for dessert.
Right.
Yeah. I love that callback.
Yeah. She's definitely taken a page out of Rick's book, but yeah, I mean, it's because Wong is cut to the heart of the matter and Beth knows it you know, on a subconscious level here, right?
Right.
She just doesn't want to admit it.
And there's the one of the reasons I think that this is one of the better, I mean, Rick and Morty's got a lot of good writing, but this is one of the better written scenes is because I feel like these are both Steel Man versions of their respective arguments. Like Rick saying, I just don't respect therapy because if I don't like something, I change it. Mm-hmm. And I think therapy gets people comfortable and stops panicking. And that's like something we value in cattle and chickens, but it's not for me. And her coming back to like, well, you use your capacity and your intelligence to justify your sickness. Because think about that. If I don't like something, I change it. Mm-hmm. Does that mean that Rick likes being covered in rat shit and blood? Does it mean, and if even if he likes that, because he does revel in it, mm-hmm. like it's clearly thrilling to for him to be that, does he like its effect on his family? Does he like his granddaughter huffing enamel? Does he like Morty pissing his pants? Does he like, you know, Beth being a complete mess of a human being? I just thought it's great. And the line, like you said, the whole the boredom of therapy or just maintaining, you know, like, why do we brush our teeth? Why do we wipe our ass? Why do we take a shower? And it's interesting, too, that like the lack of that is kind of indicative of lack of emotional health. Mm-hmm. Like if you called to one of your friends and you found out that they hadn't taken a shower in a month, would you think, oh, they're just trying some like non-shower thing?
No, or, they're Howard using it.
Yeah, you think
it's not good. It's not healthy.
Yeah, Jesus Christ, I need to come over there and see what's going on because there's some bad stuff happening.
Yeah.
But we have this weird dichotomy between, you know, physical health and emotional health. Like no one would criticize a person for being weak to go get a cast on their broken leg, but like, oh, if you gotta fucking take drugs to get through a day, then, you know, fucking man up, pussy. But it's also, yeah, it's not exciting, it's not adventure, it's just work, and some people would rather die than work, and that's Rick.
And Rick is teaching this to his family, right? I mean, Beth is clearly a product of this relationship that she's had with her father her whole life, and it's closed her off emotionally. It might even be the thing that's getting in the way of her and Jerry succeeding. I don't know. I have a bit of a hot take here because I've heard Beth's complex
I've got my blast goggles on
as an Electra complex, which is basically like you being in competition for your father's affection with your mother. I don't know. We don't know much about
this. Is like
Rick's
female
wife.
Oedipus complex. Kind of?
Yes,
right.
It's exactly that, yeah. But it got me thinking, like, okay, how much of Rick's backstory do we really know? Well, we know that stuff that we think is fake from the season opener, right? Mm-hmm. But how much of that is actually fake? We weren't sure.
And Rick's a smart guy, and he probably knows the best way to hide a lie is inside a Sabo round of truth, you know?
Yeah, we were talking about, like, oh, you know, how it seems likely that maybe Rick's would go after Rick's who don't invent the portal gun and take him out, stuff like that. If that actually happened, she could actually not be in competition with her mother, but with herself, like a different version of Beth.
Oh,
which I don't think there's
that
a complex name for that.
I've never even thought about how haunting it would be, because I've always thought about Rick. It's like, you know, you can talk about the Rickus Rick or the, you know, the simple Rick. But like if Beth knew that there's a reality where Rick loved her so much that he gave up being this universe spanning conqueror terrorist hero, like that would really fuck with you.
And then he was driven to it by the death of that version of her, and now nothing she does can measure up to the version of Beth that he remembers.
Right.
That's a really fucked up complex.
Right.
Pretty sure we don't have a name for that. I'm gonna call it the Szechuan complex.
Ah,
just because it makes sense.
Yeah, you can tug on those corners a lot. Like,
yeah.
If Beth, Beth finding out that like Rick is from another dimension and this Rick was dead, killed right after he saved the world from Cronenberg disease, like that would haunt you too. Cause like maybe my real father, I would eventually earn his love, but this alien thing that doesn't even see me as anything but a second best replacement, like.
Yeah, that'll fuck you up.
Yeah. Yeah. Beth is a complicated. Wow. That's insane. I wonder. Because, like, the therapist gets the last word, and I was thinking as I was watching this episode for the umpteenth time and thinking about interesting things to say about it, I was thinking about how you could craft a retort to, like, you know, taking care of yourself and your family is work, and some people do it or don't. Like, could Rick have a pithy—I guess the only one is, like, the stinger, where like Jaguar comes in and saves him from the concerto.
Yeah,
like,
that kind of is the retort. Yeah,
right. Like, well, you don't go to therapy because if you go to therapy and you do healthy things, you don't meet crazy people like Jaguar.
But that would then be, you know, the like you mentioned, Rick taking credit for the universe's
randomness,
saving of him.
Also, would you be in this diabolical torture chamber if you were the healthiest version of yourself?
Fair.
Like if you stayed home and played Skip-Bo with the family that night instead of getting into some kind of crazy musical themed maniacal adventures. But that would be interesting. And like with 7 seasons to go, man, I would love to see this therapist come back. I love to see her. Like we talked about like arch nemesis that Rick could have, like, you know, evil Morty, Zanzorp or whatever, the Stephen Colbert character. Dr. Wong is uniquely positioned because there's many, many villains that can kill Rick corporally, but she potentially could like kill what Rick is. You know, like if she fixed what the whatever is broken inside him or got him to understand that just because the universe is meaningless, that just challenges you to find your own meaning to it. It doesn't mean that you have to necessarily give in to nihilism. I think, you know, and that's one of the, that's also one of the many people the fears that people have in therapy is that it'll change who they are instead of like turning them into the best version they're capable of being. And it would be
interesting. You know how many times in your life you've changed who you are?
Yeah.
Every day you're changing who you are. Yeah. You just want to guide that process.
Right. Like into a place that you hopefully prefer to the alternative. And I wonder like what would the best version of Rick might not be the Rick that just stops being a scientist and hangs out and does Legos with his daughter all day. It might be someone who definitely pays attention to his daughter and loves his family, but also fucking cures cancer or provides the earth with cheap, clean, renewable energy, ushers in a golden age of human progress. Like, it doesn't have to be like you stop being a great capital G person.
It would fundamentally change, though, who the audience relates to, right? Like,
and it'd be a much less interesting show.
Especially in an episode like Pickle Rick, where everybody is celebrating all the things that make Rick, Rick, through his pickle form here. You have to wonder, like, how would the audience react to a changed Rick, to a better version, quote unquote, of Rick? I don't know that would be a positive reaction. I think the audience they have very much appreciates the Rick that they have.
Yeah, it might be something that you could do like in a final season, like you know, if like Rick, like.
But that's going to be their tension, like with this many more seasons and the things they clearly want to do with this dynamic. How are they going to keep Rick appealing to the audience they have?
I've got some ideas. Maybe we can explore them with Alan Sepinwall here in a bit.
Pickle Rick!
We're getting geared up for the 6th annual Summer Badass Fest. And while we're working on a slate of Apex badass films to enjoy, we've got an early action-packed announcement to make.
Just like last year, we're kicking off Badass Season with a live movie watch and podcast recording. We've rented out a theater for connoisseurs of action films and Bald Move fans that just want to have a great time.
Unlike last year, this year's movie is top secret. Hush, hush. No hints, except it's incredibly badass. It stars an absolute icon of the genre. We're willing to bet most of you haven't seen it, and it's going to be an incredible viewing experience with a packed house of Bald Movers.
Those of you who came to last year's screening of Total Recall know what a party it was. And those of you who didn't, now's your chance to experience it. Meet me and Jim, order some custom movie-themed drinks at the theater's full bar, then watch us record the full podcast for the movie. We reserved a venue over twice the size as last year, but seating is still limited.
It's happening Friday, June 21st at 7 p.m. in our hometown of Cincinnati. Get full details and buy tickets at baldmove.com/live.
Cincinnati's actually a pretty great city to visit, and we've got lots of details for side adventures on our event page as well. The Reds are playing the Boston Red Sox in their fantastic Riverside Stadium. The thrills of Kings Island just minutes away, and I'll be leading a kayak trip down the scenic Little Miami River on Saturday.
Again, get full details and get your tickets now on our Badass Fest 6 page at baldmove.com/live.
Oh boy, Jim. I'm really excited to have Alan Sepinwall on the podcast. Long-term fans of Bald Move already know this, but Alan's a really big reason that I got into podcasting in the first place. An early appearance of his on Bill Simmons' podcast got me hooked on Mad Men and Breaking Bad. His Firewall and Iceberg podcast got me excited to talk about television, and the rest is history. If you don't know, Alan Sepinwall is one of the most popular and well-respected voices in television criticism. He currently serves as the chief TV critic for the Rolling Stone. You can follow him on Twitter and Instagram at Sepinwall. Alan, welcome to the podcast.
My pleasure, guys.
What we've been doing with the people we've been inviting on for season three is kind of get started with your relationship to Rick and Morty. You know, you've got a kind of unique role to all the people we've talked to thus far, and as a television critic, you probably were an early adopter, or maybe not. Maybe like you, the pilot episode didn't grab you. Where did you kind of jump in on the Rick and Morty time stream?
Well, I had been a community obsessive for a long time, so whatever Dan Harmon was going to do next, I was very intrigued about. And I remember really finding the first episode of Rick and Morty funny, but also sort of almost intentionally off-putting, just in how terrible Rick is, both in his behavior, but, you know, even simple things like the belching and the coughing, like just the way that Justin played him. I was a little unsettled by it, and I'm like, okay, I'm laughing here. This is really smart. This is very, like, Back to the Future parody. I like where this is going, but do I want to watch 20 minutes of it? And it probably took me a few episodes in that first season before I felt fully on board with it, despite the fact that I could tell just, you know, how much cleverness was going on here.
Yeah, I was the same way. The pilots of shows are always a little rough, and it felt like even the animators sort of settled in after that first episode.
But it did, yeah. It felt like you're watching really smart, funny people go out of their way to, like, when they catch you catching their eye and laughing with them, they're like, fuck you, you know? Like, here's a belch, here's vomit running out of this character's mouth. Like, it was pretty tough.
I think it's around when we get to the episode where Morty is sexually assaulted in the bathroom in the fantasy land, where I'm like, okay, all right, this is doing something on another level than what I was expecting. I'm going to go along with this.
Yeah, it's shifting gears. Pickle Rick is kind of, I feel like even amongst the creators, they're aware of the fact that it's kind of like it's high watermark culturally. You know, season three was its biggest yet. What is it about Pickle Rick that just immediately grabs people, do you think?
I mean, he's Pickle Rick. I don't mean to oversimplify it, but the fact that the main character turns himself into a pickle version of himself and spends the first several minutes of the episode talking about it and saying the phrase, I'm Pickle Rick, over and over, you know, words with a K sound are funny. It's, you know, things with an exclamation point are funny. So if you go around, it's just fun to say, I'm Pickle Rick. And then it's such a stupid idea. Just an incredibly low concept, high concept kind of, you know, role reversal there. And what they're able to do with it in this, you know, dead on action movie parody, and then segueing from that into this really heartfelt, you know, serious, you know, psychological analysis of who Rick is. It's amazing the extreme highs and lows of this episode.
Yeah, and I thought it is interesting that it seems that they're not just going for like any like an 80s action pastiche. There's also elements, and they talked about this in some of the episode interviews where, you know, like Dan was inspired by the RV breaking down, the what is that, 4 days out episode of Breaking Bad? Where it's like you have this person who's like, you know, the audience respects as a towering intellect, and you take everything from them and then see if they can succeed. So it's like I think that's one of the reasons that you Community did this well as too. It's like they don't just do an episode that's about paintball. They always layer like the references. So it's like I don't know, some kind of cake. What am I going for? Like a parfait or sundae. It's where it's not just chocolate and ice cream. It's you got Die Hard, you got Predator, you got Iron Man, and then you also scoop on the talk about therapy. And it's just it's something that's satisfying because it doesn't feel like empty calories.
No, and one of the things that Community was really good at, that Key and Peele and some other shows are really good at, is it's an action movie parody that functions as an amazing animated action story. Like, there's the fight sequences, the whole bit where he's battling the rats, you know, when he's going up against Danny Trejo in the compound. All of it is really just, if it was being played straight, it would still be really good. But it's a man who's turned himself into a pickle with cybernetic rat arms and legs.
Yeah. And what's also really great about it is how they've established Rick as such a badass to this point that, like, I think I probably watched this episode 4, 5, 6 times before I even started thinking about, wait, how long was he down in that dungeon? Like, how do you go from the one cut? It's Rick. Of course he's going to have a necklace of cockroach brains that he manipulates with his tongue, that he's essentially out Tony Stark, you know? He did it in 30 seconds in a sewer, what took Tony Stark 3 months in a cave, you know?
Yeah, I did think about it rewatching it to do this podcast. Like, we jump from how he initially learns to manipulate the one cockroach brain to suddenly having a whole fully equipped laboratory, you know, and all he needs is the rat carcass to complete the look. But I buy that Rick would be able to do that, and he would be able to do it in the amount of time it would take for the rest of the family to go to the therapy appointment and be in therapy, because this whole ordeal can't have lasted very long. The timeline is on it.
It's a late afternoon that Rick spends here. I also like that they have such a knack of grounding the technology that, like, Rick has a paperclip-sized gun that can saw through an entire room, but it fully expends a AA cell. It's like it's like a smoking plasma charge ejecting from a video game rifle. It's like, okay, maybe Rick can get that out of a AA, but it's not going to be rechargeable afterwards. I love that.
It's so, like, I hadn't seen this episode in a few years, and it's so much fun to put it on and see him rampaging through that compound. And it, after a while, you just sort of accept, okay, he's a pickle and he's killing everyone. Sure.
Yeah, I remember seeing like the animatic of that they released at a Comic-Con. It was just a sequence of like him putting the final piece of the rat suit on and then just tearing through the rats. And I'm like, well, this is going to be like an interdimensional cable type episode where it's just going to be like the point is that Rick's a pickle and it's insane action. I was really shocked that they talked on the whole kind of therapy subplot where as Rick is battling himself, his family is battling each other about the kind of emotional damage he's done to the family. And I don't know. I just got an email from somebody a couple days ago where it's like, gee whiz, Aaron sure loves his therapy, because we were talking about when it came up at a previous Pickle Rick or Pickle Me This episode. And I guess, yeah, like there's so few examples of therapy done well on television and movies. Like, you know, you had the 80s and 90s. Oh, it's a head shrink. I don't want a head shrink. It's a little better now. But like this Dr. Wong played by Susan Sarandon, she just, like, they set her up to be the next punching bag for Rick. And she doesn't, like, get defensive about the fact that he's smart. She just, like, takes him apart at a, look, you're still a monkey. And you got to maintain, you got to repair yourself. And, like, there's no amount of smarts that gets you out of that. It's such a well-written scene. Can you think of anything else that's, like, kind of like this about, you know, like actually shows what a good therapist can do?
I mean, there have been shows. There was a great show on HBO for a few years called In Treatment with Gabriel Byrne, and literally every episode was just a therapy session. I think that's fantastic, especially the second season. But therapy is very hard to dramatize in an interesting way. You're right about that. And Dan has talked about having been in therapy and having learned things about himself over time. And I remember seeing an interview around when the episode came out where he said, like, if I had written this a year or two ago, Rick would have had to have the last word in that session because I was still too cocky and too confident and, you know, wasn't able to look at myself quite enough. And I think the therapy is like, you have to have that in the episode. It would still be a fun episode and really light and ridiculous if he's running around as a pickle killing all these cartel guys. But what makes it special is the fact that at the end of it, you know, Dr. Wong just picks him apart and says, look, you've just done this miraculous thing, but you also have all of these problems and you've done these things to your family. Because one of the things I sometimes struggle with the show, and I don't know that it's so much that the show itself does it as the fan base does it, and this is something it has in common with Breaking Bad, which was the inspiration for the episode, is there's a tendency to just look at Rick as a pure, awesome badass, right, and everything he does is great, and everything he says is right because he's so much smarter than everyone else, and therefore the show adopts his point of view, and you should adopt his philosophies too. And I think that Rick and Morty is smarter than that, and episodes like this show that know Rick is a genius and Rick is also completely toxic and he is doing all of these terrible things to the people who care about him and who he should care about, and you need the one to balance the other, and that's why I think this is just a great episode of TV.
Yeah, I think in the commentary, Dan was talking about that, where he said 50% of the time I want to be Rick, 50% of the time I think it would be awful to be Rick, you know. And I find myself looking at even like the interdimensional Cable episodes that they do, and they always have, you know, that little bit of nuance, that little bit of personal interaction with the characters that, you know, even in an episode as silly as that, where it's just Justin riffing on a mic for 20 minutes about, you know, the doors, fake doors that don't work, right?
Jan Quadrant Vincent.
Exactly. You still have something to ground it, something to bring you in to this kind of storytelling hook that they have. And that's the thing that I appreciate about Rick and Morty.
One of the things that I like in this episode, or not just this episode, but this episode reminded me that the show never really forgets about the fact that early on they did that one where they unleashed the plague that just conquered the entire world, and Rick and Morty jumped to a new timeline and replaced the dead Rick and Morty from that, and they abandoned Beth and Summer and Jerry to this, you know, hellscape apocalypse. And that could just be a one-off joke, but it's a thing that Rick keeps referencing, including here, as like... he's done really monstrous, awful things here.
Yeah, and it's almost like he's becoming aware. That's what I like, because you know, we've had a lot of you know, brilliant, difficult men type shows, and this is one of them. But in season three, it seemed like they are like, well, we're aware of that, and we're taking steps to counteract the, you know, oh, fifth season. What do we do about Walter White, or how do we feel about Don Draper? Like, where the show is going to show us how we feel about that. And the fact that it's like, I was watching Pickle Rick, you know, at the controls of the helicopter, explaining to Jaguar, who doesn't have infinite daughters, how he's like, oh, you know, the whole concept of familiarity, breeding, attachment, I don't need that because I have infinite kids. And like Jaguar himself, like, okay, well, good luck with that. And like, there's something like where Rick almost realizes in that reaction, like how badly he's lost, or how like completely fucked up he is.
And it's a really tough balance to maintain, because the sociopathic aspects of Rick's personality are necessary to drive the kinds of stories that the show tells. Mm-hmm. And if he becomes actualized, and if he matures, and if he figures out, like, no, I can't keep treating people like this, then the show either has to stop, or at least it has to fundamentally change in a way that I'm not sure anybody wants it to. But I do really appreciate that they've done stories like this that take a hard look at saying, yes, you think he's a badass, and look at what he, you know, and all the havoc he wrought on these, you know, drug dealers or whatever they are, but also look at how much he's hurting his daughter and his grandkids, and this needs to stop.
Yeah, I'm excited, because like that's the interesting tension with seven more seasons of the show, is how it's like they got a will they, won't they, only it's with Rick's emotional health, right?
Yeah.
And I feel like that there's room to do it, like, because usually in therapy and film, if it's depicted positively at all, it's like a continuous climb up a mountain of health, you know. And in real life, the process is you fall down a ravine and you get really pissed off and mad at yourself and lash out, and then like, oh, but I do remember how to climb this mountain. You start climbing, you break your ankle. Like, there's a little bit of that at like the end of season two, where Rick started mm-hmm. to open himself up to feeling the love of his friends, attending his friend's wedding, and then it was brutally punished by the universe by it just being this sting operation to arrest all him and his terrorist friends. So now he's had this complete season relapse of being an asshole. So there's a way to do that realistically. Yep. And correctly, and I'm in for the seven season ride for sure.
Yeah, seven seasons is a lot.
It is a lot.
Anything.
It is a lot,
and especially for something this high concept. But I feel like, you know, Harmon, you know, having been around the block a little bit, he wouldn't have committed to this amount of time if he didn't have some kind of very specific plan that he feels is going to work. And hopefully it does.
So, Alan, before we let you go, you know, as long-term Bald Move fans know, you've been super influential to like how we cover television, and we're big fans. So I just want to be a fan for a moment and ask you, what are you most excited about television coming up this fall and early winter?
The thing that I'm most intrigued to see more of is Watchmen on HBO, which Damon Lindelof is adapting. Although adapting is maybe not the right word, because it's not just a retelling of the comic book or the Zack Snyder movie. It's a sequel set in the present 35 years after the events of the comic.
Yeah.
And I've only seen a little bit. I'm not even really supposed to talk about opinions and stuff, but what he's doing is in many ways a huge departure, and in other ways like really, really spiritually true to, you know, one of the favorite books I've ever read. So, and Leftovers is my favorite show of the last 10 years. So I want to see whatever he's going to do, and hopefully this works out.
And you are preaching to the choir here. That's the number one show for us this year too, because of the Leftovers.
Yeah. Yeah. We loved what he did on that show. And like when we heard he was doing Watchmen, is like, oh my God, that's the perfect material. And you're never going to do something that's going to make like Alan Moore what happy and smile beneath his massive beard.
No.
But like this, where it's like, you know what? That material is sacrosanct. It happened, and it's like, I think that's the perfect approach, because now it's like, you know, you're telling a story on top of that story. It stands on its own. I'm just incredibly excited. I can't wait for it. We just got the
release date, October 20th. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yes. I'm celebrating a birthday that month, and I'm seeing Watchmen, the TV show.
You get that's a nice present.
It is.
Alan, we are incredibly thrilled to have you on the show. Thanks for coming and talking to us about this silly Pickle Rick episode. Where can people find you?
I write at rollingstone.com all the time. I'm on Twitter at Seppenwall. I'm on Instagram at Seppenwall, and I'm at Facebook at Alan Seppenwall.
And we are all hoping for the revival of an Alan Seppenwall podcast coming. I'm hoping real soon.
There are conversations now and then, so you never know.
My mandibles are quivering with excitement. all right, Alan, thanks for joining us.
Thanks.
Take it easy, guys.
Human music. I like it.
Here are the highlights coming up this week on Bald Move.
Our coverage of Hot D, Fire and Blood, and the 1980s Shogun miniseries continues. But then on Tuesday, for the first time in 35 years, we asked a question. Who framed Roger Rabbit? Hop aboard the train to Toontown as we revisit this incredible blending of live action and animation to see if it still holds up all this time later.
Then on Wednesday, we get our first look at Blake Crouch's mind-bending sci-fi series, Dark Matter. First two episodes drop simultaneously on Apple TV Plus, and we'll have a pair of podcasts quantumly linked ready for you to observe.
You can find these and many other great podcasts by searching for Bald Move Pulp or Bald Move Prestige in your favorite podcast app. All right, Jim, are you ready to plot to the future?
Yeah, let's do it.
Where we can't do this many more times. We got about 7 more times we can do this, but until our portal gun runs out of future energy, we're going to open up a dimension to a portal, rather, to dimension BM77 to access behind the scenes details, trivia, and spoiler for future episodes. So first off the bat, this episode had two separate commentary tracks. One with the creative team behind Rick and Morty, and another one where it's that plus they added Russell Brand. Let's talk about the, I guess, more conventional one first. One of the things that was interesting about this episode is Jessica Gao wrote this, and she wrote Dr. Wong as having an Asian surname because she very strongly believes in Asian representation. But she was thwarted because Susan Sarandon said that she wanted to be on Rick and Morty, and the time frame she had, this was the character that needed a voice.
Yeah.
So you have a white woman voicing this ostensibly Asian character. and how I think it's funny the creative tension in that led to Dan and Jessica creating this podcast called Whiting Wongs, which aired between season 3 and season 4. It's kind of it's in hiatus right now, but there's like 20 so episodes, and if you haven't heard it, it's really good because it's essentially you know, Dan and Jessica arguing about things about race and representation, especially in Hollywood. And, you know, sometimes it gets really heated. Sometimes it gets contentious. It's sometimes a difficult listen. It's a challenging listen. It sometimes will, some stuff will make you angry on either side of the issue, but it's incredibly valuable, I think, because it's two people that really love each other and they're trying hard in good faith to wrestle with some difficult issues. And if that sounds like it's up your alley, check it out. But there's a couple other interesting things, like Dan falling asleep while he's writing his episode.
And Jessica just kind of sitting there going, what do I do?
Yeah, this guy's Dan Harmon. He just fell. He just passed out. And I guess the response was just he'll wake back up. he'll wake back up. And
I can't imagine. I can't imagine what it's like to write with Dan.
Yeah.
It's got to be a great adventure.
Yeah. I mean, also, like, I guess I would just poke him. I just wake him up.
Yeah.
You know, like, I don't know. Like, wouldn't you? If this was like your boss and he's sitting there at the typewriter, he's clearly exhausted, he just falls asleep. Like, I guess I would either poke him awake if we had to get this thing done that night, or I just see myself out and be like,
how long do you wait?
If I'm seeing myself, and I don't think you do. Because here's the other thing is, like, what asshole wakes up after like a 2.5 hour nap at the keyboard and's like, I can't fucking believe so-and-so
left,
yeah. You know? Like, that's a conversation that needs to happen, you know, if that's the way things
are
gonna
roll.
Yeah,
I think the night comes to an end at that point, or if it can't, then you just say, look, I'm going to go home and write this. You get some sleep.
Yeah, yeah.
We'll revisit, you know, in the morning to, you know, edit or whatever. But, like, yeah, you gotta say, look, this is clearly not working.
I also like the idea that this whole episode was born from a brainstorming session where they'd been going for hours talking about, you know, different topics and thinking things, you know, just like no wrong answers kind of. And like it was break time. And as everyone's getting up and leaving the room, Dan's like, and Rick's a pickle. Mm-hmm. And that like caught everyone's imagination. And they decided that like you got to commit to it. Like, OK, Rick's a pickle. Why is he a pickle? How is he not going to be a pickle? And this episode is the answer to that question.
Yeah, it came across almost as like an exercise for Dan, right? Like he just wanted to get out of his typical patterns of thinking, and so he throws that out and it sticks. It strikes me as much more a Justin kind of thing.
Yeah.
I think Dan was like, you know, flirting with those styles,
tapping into the Roiland energy.
Yeah.
The Roiland energy. Anthony Chung had a theory that kind of like floored the room and floored me, because I'd never even thought of it before. The idea that Pickle Rick is a stand-in for Rick's like toxic masculinity. It's literally his dick. You know, it's an anthropomorphized penis that he then constructs an elaborate edifice on and conquers the world with.
And it's also the thing that he's using to, you know, avoid therapy. Like it's you know, that toxic masculinity description is, in my mind, perfect.
I can't believe, it's so perfect that it's hard to believe that people didn't walk backwards from it, because it's so perfect. Like, this is all a bunch of action movie tropes, which is, like, very core into toxic masculinity. I mean, hell, I love these fucking action movies, right? But
yeah,
also, I mean, I can enjoy it and also say that the heroes of them are probably psychopaths, if it were any kind of accurate depiction. Like, Arnold Schwarzenegger in Commando, that guy in the beginning with Alyssa Milano is not the guy, like, tearing people's throats out and throwing people's off cliffs and throwing pipes through people's into a boiler. Like,
no, he's, like, special agent, special services John Matrix, you know? He's... like, that's who he is in those moments.
He's not splashed around with his
girl. No.
It's or if that is how it is, that's going to be a fucked up relationship in about 2 or 3 years when she hits puberty. Anyway, I thought that was really good. Just amazingly good. I think that's all I have for that one. The Russell Brand commentary was great, because I think Russell Brand is a really interesting guy. there's an alternate take on the whole pickle. Like, this pickle thing is like this shape-shifting thing that can mean whatever you want it, apparently, because another way to interpret it is it's a creative struggle with self-abuse because he's literally pickled, you know, from alcohol.
Yeah.
I thought that was an interesting point. And how, you know, in contrast to, like, we talked about the action movie motif where, you know, you always see Arnold or Sly or Van Damme, you know, Ramboing their way through these situations. And it's fun to see these, like, strong characters reduced to nothing and watch them do that. But then you don't get to see, like, the family drama that is a result of living with that person as a father or a husband, right, or whatever. And this is the other half. This is the family in therapy trying to cope with the fact that, you know, John Matrix is a crazy person, mm-hmm, or John McClane is a crazy person.
Yeah.
That would obviously not be caught dead stepping into a therapist office. There's also this one point, like, I don't think this has happened in the commentary before, but Russell Brand just straight up asked Justin Roiland to do, like, the voices jukebox style.
Uh-huh.
I was thinking, like, how is that an amazing feeling? To be able to bring that much joy to somebody with just a voice you do, or does that, like, haunt you at night? Like, the fact that you're kind of objectified and...
Oh, I have to, like, compare it to Aaron Paul after Breaking Bad, right? Where he would be walking down the street and people would just shout bitch at him constantly, yeah, right? Like, or ask him to say it, or just, like, that's kind of what he became in people's eyes. In this setting, I think it was fine, right? They're, like, they're clearly among friends. It's a one-on-one type of thing where they all agreed to kind of sit down and hang out. I don't think it's cool to do that stuff on the street.
Yeah.
And I don't know how it makes that person feel, but I imagine it's not good.
Right. And I mean, it's super great, because I was thinking, like, okay, if you, like, what is a situation where you can meet Justin and ask him to do that?
Mm-hmm.
But, like, what do you get out of that? Like, Rick and Morty,
right,
can,
you've heard him do it a thousand times.
I think it's almost like a magic trick where you, yes, see this person that you're talking to and they're not Rick or Morty, but then, like, suddenly Rick and Morty are coming out of him. Like, that's the whole kind of magic trick to it.
You almost want to verify that it is a human being that does this voice.
Yeah. Yeah. And also it's just a dissonance. Like, that's,
yeah,
most of comedy is, like, what you expect to happen versus what actually happens and the distance between that, and seeing, yep, this, you know, goofy white boy, all these crazy voices coming out of him, it's probably funny.
Mm-hmm.
What's your preferred way of pronouncing Jaguar?
I say Jaguar.
Do you
but I might want to experiment with the Jaguar.
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 It reminded me of, have you seen Puma Man?
No.
This is this 1980 Italian superhero film.
Oh, God, I bet it's amazing.
About a man who has this proportionate speed, strength, and eyesight of a puma. And it's terrible in all ways, but it stars Donald Pleasance, which is a very well-regarded actor. He's a knight. He's very distinguished. He plays Blofeld in, like, James Bond. Like, the,
okay,
know,
yeah.
He constantly pronounced Puma Man as Puma Man.
Puma?
Puma Man. It's Puma Man again. I'm like, so is that, like, a Brit thing? They just throw U's where they don't belong when it comes,
oh, yeah,
to exotic
color,
cats?
Humor, yeah.
Oh.
They sprinkle the U's everywhere.
Yeah. It's just like, when they get confused on syllables, they just throw in a U.
Mm-hmm.
Gives them extra time to think. It's a Jaguar, Jagu, all right, R.
That's how we got soup. It was actually sop before. Mm. And then the Brits got a hold of it and U'd it up.
There's also, Dan made a point, or there's a lot of discussion about the whole Infinite Daughters and, like, what exactly is the dick move there? Because, you know, when Jaguar asked Rick, do I have infinite daughters? There's an implied kind of, like, well, I'm torn up because I lost mine. And if I could have an infinite supply, could I have maybe one? And that's kind of like the equivalent of Rick with a Starbucks coffee, or saying, I'm going to go get Starbucks. And you ask him, hey, could you get it too? And he's like, nah.
Mm-hmm. It's an inconvenience for Rick.
Yeah.
And he doesn't want to bother.
But Russell Brand had the point of, like, but is it actually the ultimate kindness? Because one of the fucked up things about Rick is exposure to these infinite timelines has made him this warped person.
Mm-hmm.
So is it better for Jaguar to be this, like, torn up person, but still believe that he's a distinct person with his own agency and he's a unique special thing, or give him a daughter and know that he has an infinite supply and now
but he doesn't have access to them.
Yeah, that love is devalued.
Yeah, I don't know. I'm not ready to ascribe some kind of mercy or some kind of sensitivity in that regard to Rick.
Yeah.
So I'm more inclined to think it's just him not wanting to put in the work of going to get one of Jaguar's daughters.
It's certainly not an intentional mercy. It might be an unintentional one. Like his own laziness
it could
and
certainly
sloth
be that.
And lack of regard for a kindred spirit accidentally spares Jaguar from becoming a shit on the magnitude of Rick.
Pickle Me This is distributed by Bald Move in association with Starburns Audio. It's produced by Jason Smith and Scott Porch from Starburns, and myself, Mineron, from Bald Move. All music featured on this podcast is from the Rick and Morty soundtrack, available from Sub Pop Records. Please subscribe, rate, and review us on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you listen to podcasts. To discover the many other great shows we do, please check out baldmove.com and starburns.audio. If you appreciate what we do and want to directly support us, consider joining our club at club.baldmove.com to get access to exclusive bonus audio and video features. Finally, you can follow us on your favorite social media at Bald Move. See you next time.